You're listening to Inside here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're revisiting some of the best conversations we've had this year, which brings me to Low and Slow. Lowrider culture has been around for decades in California and more broadly the Southwest. But recently, there's been a push from lowrider car clubs to reevaluate the intention, effectiveness, and harm of anti-cruising ordinances across the state. Earlier this year, the Sacramento City Council joined a larger shift and repealed its ban on cruising, put back in place in the 1980s. Back in June, I talked with Chicano Studies professor Denise Sandoval, based at California State University, Northridge, who has long worked to promote, highlight, and bring awareness to the lowrider cultural movement, which is currently experiencing a revival of participation, leadership, as well as representation by women of color. All right. Well, Professor Sandoval, when the topic of low-riding culture and anti-cruising ordinances has been picking up steam across the state, but let's start from the beginning. How did low-riding culture, this movement, originate? Where did it start from?
Well, low-riding really emerged after World War II, right? And so when there was that sort of boom in post-World War II, car culture, right? And there became this sort of fascination with cars and drag racing, right? Demolition derbies, cruising, all that period that we see as like the heart of Americana, right? And what it sort of means to be American, right? And on the weekends, right? Sort of enjoying your car and your community. But if we go back a little bit further, really the roots of car custom culture began with hot rodding that began a lot earlier in the late 1930s, you know, Southern California that gave birth to hot rod culture, right, was really about sort of car customizing, you know, drag racing, right? So that was really the first culture that really sort of customized and modified cars. And a lot of the top builders and painters were out here in Southern California. And I think the other thing about Southern California is just the weather. You know, we have to talk about how the weather is also so conducive to car culture and cruising and people enjoying their cars on the weekends at the park. So I always like to say, like, where hot rodding was about built for speed, right? They were raising their cars from the back, and it was about going fast. Lowriders were oppositional aesthetics, so they took it low to the ground and was about going slow. But what I always like to tell my students is the fascinating thing is how we use culture to build identity, right? So for me, when I was young, lowriding, I grew up in La Puente, and so lowriding was really big in La Puente. My family did not come from lowriders. My family roots are actually East Los Angeles and Lincoln Heights. So lowriding was something that was always in my community, but I think it was when I went to college and found an old issue of Lowrider magazine from the 70s in one of the libraries, and I started to think about how cars are the way that we tell our American story. It's how we express what it means to be Mexican Americans. And again, I have to mention that, you know, Chicanos did not originate lowriding. You know, it's also part of that birth culture. Like when you look at LA, there were African Americans lowriding, white guys lowriding, right? So I think Chicanos just have become synonymous with sort of the popular image of what is lowriding through media. And I would also argue that it's probably the Chicano culture within lowriding is also kept alive with that history with the pachucos. And, you know, here we are in June and there is a wedding or a quinceanera happening at this time where instead of limos, using lowriders instead of traditional tuxedos, they're wearing the zoot suit. So I think it particularly, right, how aesthetics and style becomes a way of cultural resistance for Mexican American communities that really began with the zoot suit generation that again took a fashion style from African American culture.
Yeah, it becomes a part of identity. Where do you see the problems in terms of this becoming, in terms of stereotyping low riding culture, especially since it's been around for decades?
Well, I think, you know, we sort of just ended with the zoot suit. Like I always like, you know, I'm a historian, right? So I always tell my students, we got to trace, right? So I think if you sort of think about how the zoot suit in the 40s became criminalized, right? And you have to think about, well, the issue was because Black and brown bodies were wearing the zoot suit, right, at a time of World War II where there was supposed to be this war rationing on materials. But I think the other side that we don't talk about is that zoot suit culture was a way to bring pride of what it meant to be Black, what it meant to be brown in a time period where there was housing discrimination, there was prejudice, right? There was school segregation. So it was a way of people of color using, right, an American product, right, a fashion style, but making new meaning out of it, right? So like a sense of pride. So I think that was another part, right, is that you're being extravagant, right, flamboyant. And I think that's something that it shares with low riding, right? Because hot rodding too, it's like you want people to look at your car or look at your body, right? If you're wearing a zoot suit, because you want to be seen. And what did that mean? That power of being seen at a time period that we're talking about where there is discrimination and racism in many Black and Brown communities in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, right? That I'm talking like sort of the pre sort of civil rights movements for particularly Angelenos. So I think that's the other side, right? Is that these sort of laws and policies come out of a larger infrastructure that already looks at Black and Brown communities in a negative way, right? So I think when we sort of think about the stereotype of low riding as gangs on wheels, you know, a lot of that is part of that historical trajectory. And a lot of the anti-cruising ordinances that you look at on the books, and I'm just looking at California in particular, you know, are really birthed in the time period in the 80s and 90s when a lot of cities were dealing with gangs, right? And sort of turmoil in the urban cities. So, you know, I think a lot of the anti-cruising ordinances went hand in hand with some of the gang injunctions. But I think at this period that we are today is that lowriders are, you know, contributing to their cities. You know, they're, I think one of the things that people don't realize about lowriders is they're very philanthropic. They're very active, right, in helping their community. Like the oldest lowrider car club in Los Angeles is the Dukes, and they come out of South LA, and they grew up in South LA when it was primarily Black. And it's the Ruelas brothers. And so they would talk about at a young age that they always learned about giving back to their community. And so, you know, in the 70s, they were doing car shows, you know, for Boys and Girls Club. They were doing car shows for Mecha at UCLA or at ELAC. So they were also part of the Chicano movement. And I think that's a history that people do not realize, right? That it, yes, it's about having a beautiful car, right? Cruising the boulevard, hanging out with your car club. But the way in which clubs have also contributed to improving the lives of their community and assisting their community. And even today, if I think about some of the strongest communities of activism, you know, I have to look at like San Diego, Barrio Logan, right? That goes back to sort of Chicano Park, where they were fighting, right, to maintain this land that was promised to them, right, for a park. San Francisco at the Mission, you know, where those lowriders actually sued the city in 1980 because of racial profiling of cruising. And so that was probably one community that works with the police and they don't have severe cruising injunctions, but they've organized like cruising vaccination drives during COVID, you know, food banks, San Jose, which is also very active, you know, fighting for their community. If there's an erasure of a Chicano mural in that community, there's the Lowrider Club speaking in front of the city council. So I think that history is one people aren't aware of, that yes, lowrider clubs are fighting anti-cruising ordinances, but all these other communities, interesting enough, I see it more outside of LA. And, you know, as an Angeleno, I'm like, oh my God, we have so much power here. We should organize to do this larger work, right, infrastructure work. But I think those are one of the things in understanding anti-cruising ordinances is thinking about they were created for a certain purpose and time period. And today, let's reevaluate that, right? Is it really, you know, that dangerous, right, or that nefarious for our communities? And there's a way to sort of work with law enforcement to create safe cruising events. And I'm sure you're aware that, like, I think it was just approved the other day. I was looking at it in the California Assembly, Luz Rivas, who's the
right. There's a bill moving through the state capitol.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, I'm not like a Miss Politics person, so I know it was like passed, right? But it was like something on the calendar. But I think what's interesting is it's overall a statement about sort of recognizing the contributions of lowrider culture to California that I think it's going to need some sort of larger bill that sort of outlaws, right, cruising.
Yeah. So that bill that you're talking about, it's a resolution that would encourage the culture and for local law enforcement to work with car clubs to have safe cruising events, as you just kind of laid out. And it's now moving to the full assembly. And this is really just the latest. Even here in Sacramento, the city of Sacramento recently rescinded an anti-cruising ordinance. This isn't the only city in California to do this in maybe the past year or even in recent years. Is this something that has just been building momentum? What strikes you about the fact that this is now moving from conversations, you know, within communities to actually moving into city and potentially state resolutions and law?
It's exciting for me, right? Because on one hand, I've been one of those strong advocates whenever I speak and in my work about that low riding has a lot to teach us about how to build community, how to use culture to express identity. And again, like when you think about in all my years of over 22 years of interviewing lowriders, and when you talk to the people that lowride and you ask them, what does it mean to be a lowrider? They always say, you know, family, right? Community, corazón, heart, right? Hard work, carnalismo, brotherhood, which I would also add sisterhood, you know, today with the entrance of women in larger numbers into the car scene. So I think the lowriders already see themselves in one way, right? And I think it's the broader culture, right? Popular media and how it's sort of stigmatized lowriding. So it's really exciting for me to see this, right? Because it's this recognition that, you know, lowriding is an important cultural expression for people of color in California, that it contributes a lot to, you know, Southern California culture as well. If you think about, you know, the people in Japan, right, they're modeling themselves on California low riding.
Right across the Pacific.
Yeah, like New Mexico, well, Española, New Mexico is the self-proclaimed low rider capital of the world. New Mexico is low riding has been sort of integrated into sort of the state's image of what is New Mexico. You know, at the Albuquerque airport, they actually had low riders and low rider bicycles there for close to a year. And I was thinking like, Los Angeles, LAX would never do that. So I always look at New Mexico as sort of an example of a state of like using, yes, they use that culture for cultural tourism, but what it does is it elevates, right, these cultural spaces and says they're American, right? There's something beautiful about them. And it's encouraging, obviously, tourism to sort of look at, just like looking at Native American pottery or basket weaving, right? They're also saying low riding is part of New Mexican culture. So I think that validation is so important because it's recognizing that our culture matters, that our culture is American. And like I always argue, I think that low riding has a lot to teach people about American culture, about building community, because when you're in the low riding community, it's not about the color of your skin or where you grew up. It's the love of cars that brings people together and builds community. And in that community, there are discussions, right, about culture and race and class, right? So you are learning about each other, about our communities. And that's so beowtiful, right? When they always talk about low riding is a movement or the low rider family, it's not just California, it's the larger national landscape. So I think like all of these things are very important, right? Because they're all part of what this sort of assembly bill is trying to get at, right? And it also educates people about low riding.
And what you're also touching upon is a validation of low rider culture that really transcends a regional community, even the state, even the country. I mean, you were talking about Japan and having a low rider culture thrive there. There's also Disney movies such as Cars, and also it's a staple in hip hop music. But actually going within the movement, how has it changed in recent decades? You briefly touched upon the growing movement of women forming clubs. Talk to us about that. How has that grown?
So women have always been a part of lowrider culture. And even in the older car clubs, you know, there were women that, you know, had lowriders, were solo riders, or had lowriders with, you know, their husbands or their partners. So women have always been a part of lowriding. But I think like when I began my interviews, I remember hearing like from lowrider clubs, I'm only speak of Los Angeles, right? Because that's kind of where my research started, was that, you know, the clubs were like, oh, we don't want women, you know, women will cause problems, right? But what I see the change, like really in this last 5 to 8 years, and I really think it's like they were young men, younger men when I met them. So my gen, like Gen X, I think as they've had daughters and just the US culture has shifted with the like girl power, women can do what they want, right? And so, as I said, women have always been there, right? And we've always sort of participated in the culture. But now there's just all these women car clubs springing up in California, like the Dueñas, right? The Chingonas down here in LA. Up north, there's one called Chicana Car Club. And so it's been like amazing to see women sort of being, to me, I see them as the leaders and the future of lowriding, right? Because as we were saying about like, you know, lowrider car clubs have always been participating in the community. But I think when we look at the longer history of Chicana activism, it has been Chicanas, Mexican-American women that have really moved our culture, right? Because this notion of like, you know, women as nurturers, but women as caring about their community and neighborhood and taking on larger issues that maybe the community, you know, I'm talking about things like gender issues, right? And family issues. So I'm really excited to see sort of where that next chapter is. And even like dealing with you know, Chicano queer community, Chicanx, right? So I think like all of these changes of how the culture and where we're at, it's really beautiful for me. And I'm excited and inspired by to see that next chapter as the community sort of moves lowriding forward.
Well, before we let you go, let's get to a next chapter. There's currently work being done at the Smithsonian, and you are a part of that. Talk to us about that and how that's taking shape and what it will look like.
So I'm working with the Smithsonian to build a traveling exhibition of lowriding. It will be mostly images because it's too expensive, right, to tour objects across the United
States. Yes.
Vehicles. But so we're building photos, right, that will tour the United States with the Smithsonian traveling exhibition, which is called Sites. And they've had successful exhibitions, like there's one touring right now with Dolores Huerta, and they have a baseball one that's touring, and their most popular one was the one on Bracero. So these, it'll travel the United States. And so the hope is like, if it goes to Denver, Colorado, you know, if it goes to Chicago, like that museum, that cultural center, that space can include the local lowrider community, right, and bring objects that way. So it's, you know, I'm really honored to be working on this. You know, when I started this, you know, I was in my 20s and I just knew that, you know, these stories needed to be told and of my community in Los Angeles. And I really saw that lowriding is such a beautiful cultural expression, and it really speaks to the tensions of what it means to be Mexican American in our histories and in the present. So I think like an exhibit like this will take it to a larger stage, right? A larger conversation. And it's exciting to see. We're still some time out because Smithsonian, it takes time, right, to build these exhibitions. So we're looking at maybe late 2024, early 2025. But also part of this project, because of the pandemic, sort of put, you know, a stop to some of the work like it did for a lot of museums. So I did oral history. So I went to like the Bay Area, San Diego, Phoenix, New Mexico, and was interviewing lowriders in those communities. So it's been exciting for me to take my work outside of Los Angeles and to really hear the voices of, you know, lowriding across the United States.
Well, thank you so much. And you know, 2024, 2025 will be here before you know it.
And I know.
Thank you so much, Professor Sandoval. You know, just sharing a piece of not only Southern California history, but California history.
Yes, thank you for the invitation.
That is my conversation with Chicano Studies Professor Denise Sandoval at California State University Northridge about the history of lowrider culture. Our conversation first aired in June. Still ahead, Cap Radio's Gary Vercelli sits down with legendary jazz pianist Michael Wolff on the heels of his autobiography, On That Note. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.